Hello and welcome to the Private Practice Made Perfect podcast. I'm Kathy Love. I started life as an OT, had an amazing, crazy private practice which I sold, and what I do now is help allied health business owners create a business that serves them, the time, the money, the joy that they absolutely deserve. And this is where my idea for the podcast started. What I want to do is to capture how hard allied health business owners in Australia work to achieve their dreams, to support their teams, to create amazing outcomes for their clients. So sit back, beverage of choice, drive safely, walk carefully, however you're listening in, and I hope you absolutely enjoy. Hello, hello. In front of me, I have Sarah Teo, director of Look Who's Talking, and here she is talking away.
I am. Thanks for having me, Kathy.
Pleasure, pleasure, pleasure. So, you've done a lot of work on team and culture and the business and the premises and customer service. Like, there's nothing that has been left untouched in the last year or so. Open the door, walk us in. What are we going to see?
Oh, gosh, we're into the clinic, you mean?
Oh, pick a clinic. Which one?
Which one? That's very true. I guess, yeah. So since the last time we caught up, I guess, yeah, the team has, I think, probably grown three times in size. So there's 3X. Quite a bit.
How many three, now?
Yeah. We're up to 24 in the team. Yeah.
Does that include myself. Jack? Does that include Jack? We'll have to let people in on Jack in a minute.
Yeah, that's very true. No, it doesn't include Jack. That's quite remiss of me. So 25
director of fun and games. Yep,
exactly. Yes, can't leave him out. He's very important.
So who's Jack? We better put people out of their misery. Who's Jack?
We better. He's become our pseudo mascot. Really, at Look Who's Talking.
I don't know that there's any pseudo about it.
No, we've definitely embraced him. We definitely embraced him. So, yes, he's quite an old puppet because we do love puppets. And he's an orangutan puppet from Taronga Zoo back in the day. And he has made a comeback and is literally, he sits in the front of our reception and at our main hub in Birkdale in Brisbane. And he's often dressed in different outfits. He might make a special guest appearance in a session or certainly on our socials.
He's very busy. Quite the selfie. Yep.
That's right. And he is director of our fun and games. So he usually is in charge of booking all extracurricular activities for the team and those sorts of things. And he's always there. So, and other than that, he just hangs around.
Yep. Friendly and useful. All righty. So we've said good morning to Jack. And then who's there? Who's on your team nowadays?
Who's on our team? So we have, I guess, the first people you see in the front door is our fabulous client care team. So there's usually two out the front. Now we've had to get an extra big reception desk. So we've got five in our client care team. So the wonderful ladies at the front will greet you and often have a chat. I think they get to talk more to the families and things than
half the time the clients like them the best.
They do. And they're such a great part of the team and such an important part of the client's experience and their journey. That often I think when I first got into business, it's an important part, but I didn't really realize how important that part of it is our community that we work with and how it's just nice to have someone that will help and answer the questions and take that time and, you know, print off some things so that they can have a turn shredding and, you know, help with the payments and things because that's how we roll out the front, help you find all the Easter eggs that are hidden around the reception area depending on the theme. So
relevant for this week. And also just check in on that real life about the traffic and the weather and the parking and holidays or no holidays or COVID or ISO or it's just that chat fest at the front waiting room.
Yeah, it is. And, you know, it's so when I first took over Look Who's Talking, on Saturdays it would be my mum that would come in and help on reception while I worked and saw clients. And even now I'll get clients going, how's your mom? I miss, you know, sitting out and having a chat with her and things like that. Usually I'd have to knock on the wall and go, excuse me, you're being a bit loud out there in reception.
Yep. Yep. Stop the giggles, please. Too much fun is being had.
Yeah. And every time we do feedback surveys or client satisfaction and things like that, often it's the client care team that are mentioned about our clients appreciate that. And, you know, that surprises them. I guess they expect us to be, you know, the clinical team to be really good. But always that client care experience, and that it's just easy to ring up and talk to someone. And, you know, even today I could hear them talking to someone about they've just gotten, it's a family that's just started their NDIS journey, and we all know how wonderful that can be. And just, out there talking through it and going, okay, show me your plan. Well, this is what, it says your third party managed. And so it's just really lovely hearing them. I enjoy listening to them and how it is such an important part.
Yeah. So before we get to everybody else, we'll just dwell on these wonderful humans. What have you done to kind of create that spirit and that energy and that customer focus, do you think?
That's a really good question. I think we've found people who are passionate about that role, so that they're really wonderful and it just comes naturally to them. It's also, I think, very important for me to ensure that everyone in the team feels like they're a part of the client journey and that they play a really, really important part, because they do. And they're as equal, they're different, but they're as equal as our clinicians are to the experience. And I think constantly talking about that, and they, you know, at our conference, the client care team present, they attend our professional development lunches, they come to our workshop days, they present, they have supervision, the same as we do. It's thinking about them as just as much a part of the journey, and that they're a career just as much as our career.
Yeah.
So it's growing it that way. And I think it's employing people that just love other people, I guess, and enjoy working and helping.
Gather around, dear listeners, for a moment of sheer audio delight. You may have heard, but we love to chat with allied health business owners. We get inspired hearing about your aspirations, the challenges you face, the roadblocks that get in your way, and business realities. So we invite you to book a free power call with a Naker Consulting business specialist, regardless of where you're at in business. Maybe you're feeling overwhelmed or overworked or overjoyed. We're here for you, and we'll meet you exactly where you are, judgment-free. It's okay to book a second or even a third call. We're always keen to hear all your news. Book a free power call with us today at naker.com.au/free-power-call. Let's get the convo ball rolling. Now it's time to get back to our regularly scheduled banter.
Hey, it's Natalie, Naker Consulting's team member, jumping in here quickly to talk about one of our core brand values, connection. That is why we have set up two really easy ways for you to connect with us on another level, or find like-minded allied health business owners just like yourself. Join us and our growing community over at the Private Practice Made Perfect Facebook group. This is a vibrant and helpful community that shares some absolute gems to growing your business. Another way is by signing up to our love letter. Only we could get away with naming a business newsletter a love letter. So get on in and sign up there so that you don't miss out on any of our events, freebies, new offers, and helpful industry insights that will keep you ahead of the game. Alrighty, let's dive back into the conversation.
You probably find that level of commitment may be a little unusual or not as typical as you perhaps think.
Perhaps, quite very possibly, but there. I think it's that ethos of, you know, one of our values is together is better, and it is. We have each other's back. We're very we're consistent in the way that we talk about each other, and no one blames each other. It's, oh, well, how can we help you with that? Yep. Or how can, you know, oh, we've dropped the ball here. What could we do to help you in this circumstance? So it's, you know, we're all just here to help one another. And
yep. Yep.
And isn't that better?
Yeah, exactly. The us and them can happen so readily with.
Yeah. And I've definitely worked in places in the past where there was that us and them, and I made a very conscious decision very early on that we weren't going to have that outlook who's talking.
That barrier here. Yep.
Yeah.
So it's 40 minutes later. We've given Jack a cuddle and we've caught up on all the news and the noteworthy with the client care team.
Yep.
Then who's there to surprise and delight us?
Well, we've got speech pathologists. That's the main part of our team. So I think we're up to 11, oh no, 12. We've got someone new joining our team. Very shortly. So there's 12 speechies, and we've got a music therapist as well, which is phenomenal. We just adore working with her. I love it. I love listening to it. And I think particularly I love the joint sessions with her as well. It's fantastic. And yeah, that's us. We do have our allied health assistants as well. Yeah. So if you're not seeing one of us, you're going out and having fun with them, which they get to do so much fun stuff when I hear what they get up to. I was like, fantastic. So
I'm just here with my spreadsheets feeling lonely.
Exactly. I'm just writing this report, but that's great.
You go out and explore the community. I'm thrilled for you.
Yeah. I'm so glad you got to go and do that. And, you know, what a special experience to get to go out and see our clients in the community like that and you know, working on in such a functional way every day. I mean, we really encourage it with our clinical team, but it's, you know, to really encourage the allied health assistants that they get to go out there and do that. It's pretty special.
Make their difference as well.
Yeah.
So if there's kind of three times more humans in the business, how has that kind of impacted, I guess, two things, operations and culture? So that multiplication, how did it land kind of with your systems and who does what when?
Yeah, very true. So I guess from an operational side of things, we, like myself, I took a bit of a step back from clinical stuff. I still do see clients because I just adore our work that we get to do. So we have our practice manager full-time that helps as well, but we do now have an operations manager who is the yin to my yang, I guess. Is that a way of saying it? As good as I am with out there with people and things, she is phenomenal writing it all down.
Well, so what difference has that role made?
Oh, well, it's huge in the sense, you know, I guess things get done now rather than me just talking about it and, you know, waffling on about
things. From the whiteboard to reality.
Exactly. Then she goes, all right, well, this is how it has to be done. And we have a clinician handbook that sort of steps you through things, and she can spot a process where it needs to be and write it out. And I don't know, the clinician handbook is very long now, so, but she's onto some others now. So yeah, I guess, and we've had to really think about, I guess, the structure of our team. So we've got three team lead roles now to sort of help, and they sort of are accountable for their little teams. I think support both clinically and professionally is a really, really strong focus for us. So we want all of our team to feel like they're really well supported and they're getting enough of that one-on-one time, because, you know, with a much larger team, you know, I don't have the time to see everyone as much as we need them to. So we, you know, really planned our, we call it an organizational tree, because we're all branching up and supporting one another, not necessarily that top-down approach. So, and it's so great to see, you know, some of the team that have spent a few years with us, to see them grow and develop and, you know, move into this new role and as team leads. It's great to see. And I think it's something as a industry, in order to keep staff and to keep people in this industry, it's something that I don't think we've done particularly well industry-wide. particularly in private practice.
Yeah, it's happening, so, Mart.
Exactly. So it's so great that we get to then offer that for people. And I've got ideas of where we want it to go as the organisation grows and where that, you know, how the tree looks after the team continues to grow. So
it's incredibly exciting to think that a new graduate can come in and start with in a business like yours and very quickly get quite a clear sense of a pathway that isn't 18 months, that could be 3, 4, 5 years with you, and that they can see the stepping stones through it. As important as those beautiful experienced clinicians who want variety and different opportunities and project work and a bit of a different balance across their workday as well. So it's great for recruitment, but it's really interesting for retention as well.
Absolutely. And even just as a professional, retention, you know, the client, the day in, day out client work is a lot. It's wonderfully rewarding, and that's why we get into it. But it is really nice to think about how you can offer different sorts of types of services and, you know, build in different roles. We've got one of our clinicians is head of our marketing and social media team. So she has a bit of less time with clients and more time doing those sorts of things, as well as, you know, community engagement, thinking of ideas and ways to get out in the community and different projects. And I'm really passionate. Yep. And that's the great thing about private practice, in the sense that, you know, the options are limitless. We can do what we want. I mean, we might be a big old failure, but at least we knew we tried.
Yep.
So if that sounds like a great idea, what can we do and how can we do it?
You don't have to wait for approval and a 3-month turnaround.
Exactly. There's just not all that red tape and those sorts of things. And it's, you know, it's moving rapidly and changing rapidly, which is super exciting.
Yeah. So all these wonderful new humans rattling around, you've got an operations manager who's whipping it into shape and documenting, systemizing everything that stands still. That is just such a great investment in a business to really document your operating system. It adds value to commercial value, you know, long-term. Yep. It's something you can, that will have a commercial price on it as well. Yeah. What about the impact on culture as you've gone to 3 to 6 to 9 to 12 to 24?
Yeah, look, it's ever-changing. The culture changes and evolves with whoever you bring in. Absolutely. And I guess that just means you just need to keep talking about it. You need to keep investing in it. You need to. It really is, I guess, our number one priority as a team, about how do we ensure that those values are reflecting where the team is now heading. So I know we had first articulated our values a couple of years ago, and within 12 months they'd totally changed again. I mean, they'd evolved, I guess.
Yep.
The still spirit
probably
is still there.
Anchored on some of the core essence, but the expression of them could well be different.
Yeah, absolutely. And at our last workshop day, again, we did an activity around our values and going, okay, well, what do those behaviours look like? And putting that, I think you really have to get everyone involved in that. I can't be the one driving that. It really needs to be, everybody needs to believe in it. They need to know how to, you know, act on, and they need to feel ownership over it. It's become much bigger than me at this point. It needs to be everybody involved with that. So, and it was so, like, it's always so great, the workshop days, but it was really nice to see how everybody interpreted the values and how that might look day to day, is how that would reflect with our services, our clients, and with each other, which I think is, you know, often the most important part of it. And then what sprung from it was, right, that's it, let's have committees around each value so that we can put some of these ideas together. So it just sort of organically grew into this really great opportunity that everyone's like, right, so they've all gotten themselves into three committees as we have three values. And each term it's going to change, apparently.
You better read that memo.
Yes, I better read that. That was the operations manager. She's got that organized. You know, each term it's going to change and they're going to come together and just try and get one thing out there that would speak to that value together. Mm. And it was so great watching everybody.
You're just standing there with your heart bursting with pride?
Pretty much. Mm. Pretty much. It's just... I feel very lucky to work with the people that I do work with. Mm. They're sensational people.
Yeah. Just sounds like a buzz. Sounds like a buzz.
Yeah.
The other thing that I know you've done with your team is really look at work style, lifestyle, flexibility. And the pandemic has driven a certain amount of this, but you can do whatever you want with the learnings out of the pandemic. Yeah. How's that kind of showing up in your calendars and timetables at the moment?
In our calendars? Well, we have done at the end of last year, did a big reshuffle. So we've actually moved to a shift style of practice whereby you might be on the morning shift, so you'll see five clients in the morning. We all have lunch together because we can't get enough of each other. That's usually the biggest, and that's been the biggest thing around the whole shift. I guess the biggest criticism or challenge.
They're missing their friends.
Pretty much. It's that we don't get as much time. We get more time doing the things, you know, outside of work, but then less of that ad hoc sort of stuff. But anyway, we've got to address that too. So we all have lunch together, and then you might be on the afternoon shift, so you might see afternoon clients. But if you're in the morning shift, you would then have a block of time in the afternoon, and that's your admin time.
So and then you're home.
Exactly, that's right. And there's a bit of flexibility with that. So if you want to work from home, that's fine. You can go home and do your admin at home, or, you know, if you're in the afternoon shift, you have your block of admin time in the morning. And I guess that sort of really developed around this idea, as you said, around flexibility. Mm. It sort of came home to me one last year. I remember one of our speeches had organized, and it was a really random day in the middle of the week. She'd organized for annual leave. And as it was coming up to it, I was like, oh, you know, what are you doing on that day? Just out of interest. She goes, oh, I've booked in the car for a service and I'm getting my hair cut and I'm doing this and I'm doing that.
That's life what you're admin. Doing.
Yeah. And she's like, I hope that's okay. I just never get any other time to do it.
Ooh.
Really? Exactly. And I was like, really? You're right. Like, this is, and the, I guess, the psychosocial risk factors in that to think about that, particularly as, you know, workplace health and safety legislation is changing, if it has not already changed, but, you know, slowly moving out Australia-wide around, you know, we have to manage psychosocial risk. How do we do that? You know, our occupations, it's a high cognitive load, it's a high emotional load, it's a high time load. There's a lot going on. There's a high psychosocial risk just inherent in the work that we do. So, and that was a big moment for me because I, you know, myself, I have less client load. So I do have a bit more flexibility. They go, oh, I'll just work from home that morning and I'll be able to, you know, go and watch the kids at cross country. Whereas I know myself with my clients, you feel such guilt if you have to cancel for a personal reason or something like that. And I, you know, I think absolutely the pandemic has shown that these sorts of things can be done. We have to think differently in the way that we work now. Yeah. And, you know, it's an interesting way to think about, well, how can we offer that flexibility in this space where it is so focused on people
delivery,
you know?
Yep.
Yeah. It's people with
intensity.
People.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. We're not selling a service. We're not selling a product. We're reliant on people with people. So we really have to take care of the people that are delivering that service. You know, they are you can't care for someone else if you're not taking care of yourself first and foremost.
Yep.
So we have, you know, done a lot of work. So we've totally rescheduled all of our clinicians. So they're all on this shift model, and the feedback has been sensational. I think it's also great for our clients because they're getting extra, you know, they're getting those earlier morning appointments or those afternoon ones. So that's been really well received from the clients as well. But it's particularly for the clinicians is that they get that opportunity to have that workplace flexibility. They can work from home should they choose to. They can, you know, the afternoon is theirs as long as, you know,
the right things get done.
Exactly. Mm. So it's been really, really positive. As I said, pretty much the biggest feedback has been, oh, there's less of that ad hoc time together throughout the day. And so that just means we need to get a little bit more creative around some of the social events that we do. And that's apparently one of the projects that one of our values committees is on to about, I think it's called Look Who's Sporting. They've called it that. So they're wanting to create a sporting team outside of work, which is really good. And I'm very passionate about the people and our team, our talkers, and investing in that. And it's the shift model has been great. It allows that time. You can think, you know, you can sit down and actually get the report finished rather than in 15-minute increments between appointments here and there. You know, you come to work knowing I've got 5 appointments. You know, like it's
yep.
you know, the just even the cognitive load, just thinking about that and those sorts of things. We've also invested really heavily in an employee assistance program, and we've really found a local organization that just aligns so beautifully with our values, and I've done a lot of work with them in particular, but I think it's also finding, you know, people who are trained in this. Like I don't know how to manage these conversations.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Probably best that you don't.
Yeah. Yes.
Maybe very in a good. Really good way, because so many business owners do step into this counselling life coach role, and possibly it could be better managed in more differently professional hands.
Absolutely. And they're just it's really wonderful working with them, that we've got them coming in each month and doing a lunch and learn around particular topics. So I have a bit of a passion around this topic of professional resilience. I do think it is the biggest missing skill in our workforce.
Ooh, what do you define it as?
Professional, I think it's that capacity to be able to continue to stay in this industry, in a changing industry, whilst managing yourself first and foremost. I think we get into this, you know, we get into allied health because we care and we want to help people. Mm. We're natural empaths, but we really don't learn
help
the
ourselves.
Skills. No, we don't.
Miss
we
that
don't
bit.
Learn. Yeah, exactly. We don't learn it at uni. We don't learn how to, you know, how do you establish professional boundaries?
Mm-hmm.
We don't learn that as a skill. We don't learn, you know, just, you know, how do you manage the emotional wear and tear of the everyday job that you have?
Mm-hmm.
We're trained to deliver evidence-based practice, but how often are we actually funded in order to be able to deliver evidence-based practice?
Yep.
You know, that's a constant negotiation and a constant, you know, that emotional wear and tear, you know, it's this age of compliance, you know, and the benchmarks and the goal, they're constantly changing and adapting. And it's something we have to keep, you know, adjusting to. And, oh, yes, now we've got to write the reports this way and we've got to do that, which is, you know, it all adds to
the load.
The absolute load. Mm. So it's, you know, to me, professional resilience, and I really don't see it as just an individual skill. I think in order for it to work really well, you have to create a workplace culture that supports professional resilience and makes it a part of the conversation and empowers your team with those skills and keeps building upon them. I think it's a part of the leadership. You know, we need to value it. It needs to be a part of everyday discussions and needs to be a part of your professional learning agenda, I guess, for want of a better word. And it does. There is that part where we have to build that in our people. You know, they have to learn those skills. At the end of the day, you can have a really supportive, wonderful workplace, but if you're not, if the people don't know how to do it, or, you know, it kind of comes up against it. So, but I really do think it, I believe it's the greatest threat to our industry at this point in time. And you can see that in the huge burnout rates and things like that.
It's resignation with nowhere else to go.
Exactly. Or that, you know, people jumping here, there and everywhere through to different organisations. And I really think it's just this piece of, I think we're missing the opportunity in our training to learn some of that, and then as an industry to go, right, we really need to continue to work on these skills, because we don't learn it, and they're such an important part of what it is to be an allied health professional.
Yeah. You've done well to partner with a EAP program who gets it, and increasingly they've repositioned themselves in the last couple of years, especially to have a preventative role rather than a pickup role.
Absolutely.
And the fact that they're coming in and they're part of that psychosocial safety piece. No fear, you know, they're familiar faces. You know, you're breaking down the barriers for any team members to pick up the phone and say, can you talk me through something or other?
Yeah, we tried to have reframed it as it's a professional debrief. It's not a counselling session. It's a professional debrief. And it's so helpful to get sometimes just have that external person to talk to and think about, you know, how to work on those problems and just have someone to talk, to
Are talk
through these
it?
Things. Yes, much more now. It took a little bit, but I think having so the Lunch and Learn is really good. I think Jeanette from Daly and Ritchie is our 26th member of the team. She's a pseudo member of the team. She's we do love her, and she's fantastic coming in and working with us. And what we did to actually encourage it a little bit more is actually get one of the counsellors to come in and join those Lunch and Learns, but actually stay for a few hours on site to walk around to kind of take away that stigma. I think we often go, oh, look, it's just not that bad. I don't, like, it's not terrible.
I
don't
need to.
I need
a good night's sleep. I'll be fine.
Yeah. Mm. Like, it's rather than thinking this is a preventative measure, you know, and I might learn a skill here or learn an opportunity whereby, oh, I see, I never really thought about establishing that sort of boundary or having that difficult conversation. Mm. You know, we don't get trained in how to. Oh.
No.
Navigate these conversations, and there's nothing really, I mean, obviously with psychologists there's a lot more sort of best practice articulated around exactly, but you know, for OT, speech, music therapy, all these, there's nothing, but we're working in a very similar space, and it's getting more and more complicated, the clients and things that you just see in the family dynamics, and we're still we don't get the same
pressure.
We just don't learn how to do that. So it's well worth the time and the investment. And you know, I'm learning so much about it. I think one of our recent ones was on professional boundaries, and Jeanette was talking about time as a professional boundary, and I've never thought of it. I never thought my time was a professional boundary. And I'm like, you're right. It's, you know, just little things like that that you go, you're right.
That's why that went wrong.
Yeah, absolutely. That's why I'm constantly 20 minutes over all the time. You know, I'm not articulating that well. And that all adds up. That's why I'm working until 7 o'clock at night.
It just reminds me, we've all seen posts and heard colleagues and the like sort of say, can you believe it? You know, my clients email me at 11 o'clock at night.
Yes.
And then you just think, okay, well, where's the problem with that?
Yes.
Why do you know? Why are you checking?
Exactly.
It's okay not to reply at 11:05, you know.
Yeah. But it's you know, allowing yourself to go, no, it's.
I can wait.
It's, yeah. No. You're at work at 9 o'clock the next morning. Yep. You know, that's when you can reply, not yep. at.
Or even yeah. at 10 or 11, you know.
Yeah, when you get to it.
Yeah, when you get to it. Yeah. Oh, that is so interesting. It's just a research project in the making though, isn't it?
I think so. And there is, there's a fair bit out there because I've delved into it quite a bit. And actually at our last workshop, we talked a bit about professional resilience, and we have now energy friends at work. So everybody has an energy friend where you get to share. And I think that was a really big learning concept for us. Mm. I don't know if you've
learned about that. Explain it a little.
That discretionary energy, surge capacity, those sorts of things. So looking at, looking at how you're thriving, surviving or overwhelm, and it's, in order to be thriving, you need to have extra energy. So how are you building that extra energy? Yeah. And I think that was, I know for Hayley, my energy friend, and that was a big thing for us when we were off doing a workshop recently around it, going, I had never thought about building energy. I think we so often just go, I won't go and go for that walk this afternoon because I'm just going to save energy. I'm too tired. Rather than going, actually, if I go and do that, I've built energy. I've got extra energy.
Yep. Mitochondria is the new chocolate. Well, mitochondria love chocolate. So anyways.
Well, exactly. So, you just don't think of it in that way. And that fact that, we need that extra energy in order to, cope with.
How do you create it and store it?
Exactly. Absolutely. So, and how do you have, when that surge capacity, when something goes wrong in your personal life and you need that extra energy in order to deal with that. It's, we all go through different stages of thriving, surviving, overwhelm, but, you want to try and spend most of your time in thriving. And it really is a skill. Professional resilience is a skill to learn. And I think, I think most of us think, oh, you're either resilient or you're not. It's a skill like any other that we should be investing, particularly professionally, in order to, keep people in this industry.
Yeah. As is the ability to know and manage your personal energy as well. They just snuggle in together so beautifully.
Absolutely. Mm. Like it does, we all need to learn, how to do that. And I think I was reading something recently talking about surge capacity, and I can't remember the author off the top of my head, but it was a really interesting article about this idea that, throughout this entire pandemic, we've really been using that surge capacity has been taken up in the last 2.5 years, just going, we don't know what's going to happen here.
Yep.
Not sure, what tomorrow is going to bring, the energy that takes out of you. And I think that's why, particularly, this is the time of the great resignation and that.
A lot of flat batteries.
Absolutely. Mm. Absolutely. That's a huge part of it. So,
Watch this space. Speaking of watching spaces, you mentioned conference.
Yes.
A little way back.
Yes.
What is it that you guys do that ends up in a conference?
Oh, glad you've asked. So we pretty much live for the conference. So at the end of the year, we kind of time it with our Christmas party. So last year it was actually 2 days. We went away for 2 days. We couldn't go very far, so we just went to the Gold Coast. So we spend a couple of days. It's really an opportunity for each of us to present individually. Mm. So we try. And
let's set the scene here. We're in a conference facility and there are tables and there's a screen and a projector and slide decks and
goodie
bags.
Yeah, absolutely. Yes, yes.
Name tags?
Always.
Yeah.
We've always got.
I think the lanyard, the whole thing, the pen.
Yeah, we sometimes go a little bit cash at the conference. There's definitely blocks of chocolate.
Yeah. It's a whole profesh setup. Okay, and everyone presents. Yeah.
Absolutely. So everybody has presents. So our client care team, they all present as well. So the entire team present. And last year it was over 2 days. So we spent two nights down at the Gold Coast. And yeah, so we're, you know, it's pretty profesh.
Where do you do it?
I think it's a really great opportunity to give everybody the opportunity to practice those skills.
Yeah.
To work towards something that's it's like almost like a different project to have a think about and, you know, to spend that time researching, putting it together. It's also just a great opportunity to spend a few days together and see each other in a different way and in a different light. I think it's also, I guess, a bit of an opportunity to be a little bit more professional, you know, to actually go, no, we're serious about
our find your shoes.
Job. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Pretty much. That's it. You know, it's an opportunity to wear a dress, which we never get to do in our day-to-day work.
Yeah,
because we spend most of it on the floor. I just think it's a really great opportunity to, you know, practice different skills, give everyone that opportunity. We do workshop days throughout the year as well. So we have one workshop day a term where it's, again, so people who are really interested in presenting can do so. We get some guest speakers in, those sorts of things. And they're often really great opportunities to work on, you know, if you know, we've got a monthly focus or you know, something going on at Look Who's Talking. It gives the opportunity for us all to get together and really brainstorm, you know, come up with solutions. What's our, you know, our focus this month is outstanding onboarding and how we're revamping how we onboard our clients and their families. Mm. So it gives everyone that opportunity to work together.
The conference is next level.
It is. It is really next. It is really next level, and it's just. It's a lot of fun to work towards that. It gives us all a common goal to look forward to. And as I said before, I do think it's an opportunity for us to be like, yeah, we're actually professionals, and we have a lot to contribute. And they're fantastic. Like, I'm always blown away by. You know, seeing everybody present in that way, and you know, to really encourage getting out there and doing it more in the community as well. So, but it is, the conference is a really great couple of days. It's something, you know. Talk starts sort of in July.
What are you wearing?
Yeah, we've already got the dates booked. They're all.
Yep. Yep, not negotiable.
Not negotiable.
You wouldn't want to miss it.
No, it's the highlight of the year. That's what we're still talking about, the last conference now.
But that's what culture is about. You know, I've just reread some of Simon Sinek's stuff, and culture is storytelling and narratives and the stories that you share. So you're building memories and layering on the narrative for 2023.
Yeah, absolutely. Very true, actually. Yeah, I hadn't really thought of it in that way, that storytelling aspect. And as a speech, I should have.
Yeah, really. That's okay. Quiet note to self. Yeah. The other thing I love about it is it totally celebrates the homegrown heroes. It's not that the grass is greener and that you have to bring in the big name speakers and whiz bang clinicians. It's we are enough people. We are more than enough. We are great at what we do, and we're going to share it.
Yeah, you're so right. It really is such a celebration of everyone that we, you know, all of our talkers.
Mm.
It's an absolute celebration, and I, you know, to see, and I really particularly love watching how people have changed, you know, through the years. I adore it. I just go, yeah, remember that? Remember last year when you presented to now? Like, look at the change, and as a professional, as a person, but, you know, also clinically, like, look at the way that you're talking about things. Yeah, like, it really, we invest a lot in our professional development, our professional learning at Look Who's Talking. So, and it's just great to see when that really starts to shift, and they really start to take control of that learning. It just skyrockets then, and you can really see that, and you can see them wanting then the feedback, like, tell me, what can I do? How, what could I do next time? And then that sparks a conversation for.
And they're planning the next conference on the drive home.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Lots of thinking about where we could go. That's
Yes. I'm anticipating Fiji or Cairns or getting on a plane before
that
you
sounds
know
very
it.
Similar to the conversations we're currently having. So it is great to see them.
So we've got a few minutes left, and I guess we need to acknowledge that we are hopefully, she says with fingers crossed, at the tail end of a pandemic kind of phase. And whilst there is political and international tension and just the last throes of Omicron or whatever we've all had, she says coughing. I can edit that bit out or not. What do you think the next kind of 12 months is going to bring for Aussie Allied Health business? What's your crystal ball saying?
Oh, gee, that's a really...
Yeah, if you could just solve all those problems.
Yeah, that'd be great. Yeah, no worries. How many minutes have I got? I think it really is a... I think I don't think it's just Allied Health. I think it's... You know, workforce-wide, that I really think it is a time to reflect on what everyone really wants out of work. Now, you know, it really is a time to listen to the employees and really go, what does the workforce need to do to shift so that we're able to give you what you want? Because I think we've all had this opportunity to be more flexible. We've had to be more flexible. Well, why can't we stay that way?
Yeah.
You know, what are we going to do? So I think we will see, particularly in Allied Health, I really do think we will see more of that. I hope that we see more of that because I think we do need to really look at, you know, how do we keep our workforce in
happy
the
and safe.
Yeah, absolutely, because it's, you know, most of the people I went to uni with are no longer practicing.
Really? Gosh.
Yeah, absolutely. And so you've got to think all that knowledge and experience is then
the resources
going as
just,
well.
Yeah,
yes,
disappeared.
Yes, absolutely. So I think, you know, we really have to think about how does that shift and how do you evolve people's careers so that they're still in it.
Yep.
And providing that experience.
My word at the moment for contemplation is sustainability.
So
that just sits on my monitor, and I think now I'm kind of with you with a lot of that thinking is what do we have to do as humans to sustain ourselves and our colleagues and our communities and our planet and whatever else we need to sustain. There's probably more things on the list.
There's lots of things to sustain. But yeah, I think it really is it will be very interesting to see how it all shifts, and I think it will probably be longer than 12 months to really see the full repercussions of this sort of thing. And I think it's, you know, you've kind of got to roll with the change and be brave to think outside the box and to think about how you can change
and grow differently.
Work
differently. And it's very much, well, there's a lot more conversation about how work fits into life rather than how life fits into work.
Yes.
And so what is the role of work? What is the human role of, or the human role in work?
Yeah,
and
absolutely.
How's work going to happen?
Yeah,
Yep. Doesn't matter where it happens. We already know it can happen anywhere. Just got to get the time zones right for me.
Yes. Yes, relevant. That's always a...
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. So, yes, the world, yeah. And I think it's just this time to try new things, to innovate. And I, you know, allied health, I don't think we're particularly, we haven't really shaken up the industry all too much over the years. I know some contacts sort of within the NDIA and going, they would have liked allied health to be perhaps more innovative within, you know, when we're thinking.
Fair call.
You know, the old NDIS. So, you know, now's the time to jump on board and think about it.
Yep. Bring some projects into play. Be prepared to get it right, get it wrong, fix it fast.
Yes. Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And bring everybody involved in that, you know, help, you know, get everyone in your team involved in that. It's, they often come up with extraordinary ideas and you know, to really, I guess, empower the people that you're working with to follow what they're passionate about. And we have such a unique position in, you know, private practice in particular, to be able to really think about that and do it, give it a go.
Yeah. There's sizable risk in this current context for if you actually don't change your service delivery model, if you don't change your employment models, if you don't change your mindsets, freshen up what a work, you know, what a, you know, I don't like the concept work-life balance. I just don't think they're measuring the right, comparing the right variables, what a life balanced lifestyle looks like.
Yes.
You're going to be left behind. You're not going to be the crowd favorite as a destination employer, you know.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I think, you know, thinking then, you know, you really, as business owners, you really have to then invest in that energy for yourselves so that you have the capacity and the energy to go, all right, I'm prepared to shift. I'm prepared to change.
Yep.
I'm prepared to do that. That does take a lot of energy. And we've spent the last 2.5 years, you know, changing constantly.
Yep.
Yep. And just, you know.
But then not wanting change. But then wanting it, change. But then not wanting it. And then getting it not like.
That's exactly. That's my whole perspective on the NDIS. I think it's the most incredible thing. You know, it's challenging, absolutely. And, you know, yes, it's constantly changing, but that is also its strength. You know, it is responsive to feedback. It, whilst it's annoying, and it would be nice if if things stay the same, but we don't want things to stay the same. That's the great thing about it. And I remember very early on going, I'm not going to think negatively about it, about the NDIS. It's just, yes, that's a challenge, but
there to be adapted with.
That's right. At least they're changing. And I think you've got to have that opinion about your business as well and what you're offering to your clients and to your
team,
people that you're working with. Because it's, I think you're right. You will be left behind if you're not really thinking about what you can do.
I think we're already seeing it a bit, which is interesting.
Yes. Absolutely.
Well, you and Jack, if he was around, can have the talking stick for the last moment. Is he there? He's probably, no, he's probably
no,
out.
No, he's not. He's not here at the moment. He is.
What would you like, what thoughts would you like to kind of leave listeners with?
That's a really good one. What would I like to, I think, what I would like to leave them with is, don't be afraid to be guided by the people that you work with. I think in private practice, you can get bogged down in your vision and what you want it to be. I think you, in order to grow it and for it to become something that lasts, it has to be about our vision and our dream. It's only as good as everybody there.
Oh, couldn't agree more. Couldn't agree more. She just lands it. She just lands it. Yeah, we're done.
Boom, I'm out. Mic drop.
thanks for dropping by.
No worries. It was really good. Thanks, Kathy.
Thank you so much for listening to this episode. For the show notes and other resources, our webinar replays, they're all available over on naker.com.au. And if you're loving what you're listening to, please subscribe. We don't want you to miss out on a single thing. And if you want others to get the same benefit that you've had from listening into these episodes, please share this episode and any of the others forward to any of your other allied health business colleagues. And we are totally here for you. Don't forget for a moment that you can jump on in and book that power call, and we can see how we can help you get the best of business done. Looking forward to seeing you there.